Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
The Virginia Cavaliers are now 0-5 after another heartbreaking loss, this time to Boston College. 3 points yet again. And the Wahoos come out flat yet again. We got a lot to talk about, got a lot to discuss. Got a lot of questions that need to be answered, and I'm going to provide my feedback. So it's the Ball Hawk Show podcast. Appreciate you for taking time out today to listen to the latest from me. And if you haven't, make sure you follow me on Twitter at I Am Ball Hawk and Instagram at I Am Ball Hawk, and provide feedback on Spotify, iTunes, and Believe Network. So without further ado, let's get this episode started.
What up, though? Ball Hawk Show.
Y'all want unconditional love. No doubt. Talking about the stuff that don't wear off. It don't fade. Now it lasts for all these crazy days, these crazy nights. Whether you wrong or you right, her mama can still love you, still feel you, still there for you, no matter what.
What up, 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 though? Welcome to the Ball Hawk Show podcast. I'm your host, Amal Hawkins. Again, appreciate you for taking time out today to listen to this latest episode of the show. It's going to be a tough episode right here, man, because, got to get right to it. Got a job to do. I know a lot of people don't really want to recap the game. They just want to get right to the nitty gritty. It ain't about X's and O's. It's about mindset, like what's really going on. As much as I look at this film, this game, the third quarter, ain't no way, boy, ain't no way. That third quarter was trash can juice all the way around. You talking about getting your hind parts kicked? You come out of the halftime and you flat on both sides of the ball? That can't happen. That, you know what? Let me go. You know what? We're going to set the mood for this episode. Y'all sit back and enjoy some of the NFL's most memorable post-game tirades. This is just the energy Petty Hawk on. Let's just listen to some.
We just got our totally kicked. We couldn't do Jim Moore. Diddly poo offensively. We couldn't make a first down. We couldn't run the ball. We didn't try to run the ball. We couldn't complete a pass. The second half, we couldn't stop the run. Every time they got the ball, they went down and got points. We got our...
That sounded like Saturday. It's almost like Jim Moore was on the field with us Saturday. That hit home right there. Everything he said hit home. Let's keep going.
Totally kicked in the second half.
Hey, listen. Don't talk to me, all right?
Nah, we ain't listening to that. That's when Ryan Leaf went off on a reporter. We getting back to the coaches. Let's see what Callahan got to say.
Got to be the dumbest team in America in terms of playing the game. And I'm highly critical because of the way we give games away. We give them away, period. And it's embarrassing, and I represent that. And I apologize for that, but that's the best we can do. That's a sad product.
So if you got the crosshairs, you got the laser, you put it right on my chest, I'll take full responsibility. I'm raising the stakes right now. This is a poker game. I'm shoving my chips to the middle of the table. I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out. Okay? This team is going to the playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it.
Yeah, I remember this one.
You kidding me? Playoffs?
Playoffs?
I just hope we can win a game. Another game.
There's three quarterbacks in this football team. Whichever one starts, starts. Whichever ones don't, we'll back him up. Period. Cut and dried. It's nobody's concern but ours. Nobody's. Next.
Injuries from the game.
Talk to the trainer. Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care? Okay. If you were 2-7, you'd be in a bad mood, too. What next?
This is how I believe, okay? Uh-oh. I'm from the old school. I believe this.
Let's go, Mike.
I would rather play with 10 people and just get penalized all the way until we got to do something else rather than play with 11 when I know that right now that person is not sold out to be a part of this team. It is more about them than it is about the team. I cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game.
Hello.
Hello. You play to win the game.
The Bears are who we thought they were. That's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their
rest in peace.
But they are who we thought they were. Didn't and we mean. Let them off the hook.
So how I had a Twitter space yesterday. Salute to those coaches, those great coaches, and rest in peace, Denny Green. I had a Twitter space yesterday that got Men in Black at the end because, you know, it got animated. But it's folks who really don't care for Tony Elliott's body language and the things that he says after the game. I guess they want him to show more fire and frustration. So I shared this. It's like, is that what people want, or do you want like a happy medium? Because I feel like yesterday, if you go back through the transcript of what he said post game, he took onus. He said it was on him. You know, I've got to do a better job as a coach, along with the staff, of helping them make the transition to understand that when you have success, you can't take your foot off the gas. You can't become complacent. Every play, every drive, until the game is over, you got to be looking at how can I get better? How can I improve? How can I rely on my fundamentals even more? I will say this. I remember talking to him after we beat Georgia Tech, and he was saying these same things. Last year, he was like, yo, these guys just got to learn how to win. Like, they got to learn how to just keep playing, not just looking at the scoreboard and trying to hold on, but continue to be aggressive, continue to attack, continue to follow through on the assignments. And a lot of times, he just said, so some coaches, they can get right through to players. Like, they connect with them. The player run right through a wall for them from day one. And then some coaches, it just take an assistant or this coach to really get through to certain players to truly understand, like, yo, what I'm telling you is to benefit you. You don't have all the answers. And I think you see right now, because this is what I see on film, I just see a lot of times, like, players will start out well or play calling will start out well because it's I'm not just pointing at players. I'm not just pointing at coaches. I always like to be fair, and I think that's why I frustrate a lot of fans because I try to be fair in my assessment because as a former player, I try to pull on my experience as a former player, and then from a fan point of view, I understand now, and I've learned over the years, and I've gotten better. I've been guilty of going at fans like, oh, you never been there. You need to shut up. I had to take a step back and just be like, you know what? That's not fair for me just to say that because there are successful people that's in the sport of football that never played, but they still understand conceptually what it takes to be successful. You know, like if you're around certain things for a long time, you didn't have to do it to truly understand what success looks like and what you can pattern out of. You know, that's why we always harp on like what coaches before did. The good things they did before, we pull on those positive experiences and we say, hey, can you try this? And if not, how come? And then if somebody explains, well, the moving parts are different. The philosophy is different. It's just tough to ask this coach to do what that old coach used to do because everybody has it. Believe it or not, and a lot of people don't like to hear this, everybody has their own system that they, in a sense, mastered. Like, you can't just get a Bill Walsh old playbook or who, like any of your top offensive coordinators in America today, you just can't, they just can't take their playbook and be like, here you go, Dez, run these plays. Dez doesn't understand how you're set. Like, he wouldn't understand how to set up certain plays off a certain play. Like, I guess what I be trying to say is a lot of times when a player is pulling from his true experience and you'll see frustration on Twitter, it's like you'll see one inspection, like take Ben Kurt. Shout out to Kurt. Quarterbacks see the game differently. So a quarterback would look at things and be like, it's simple. Like, they look like, if you ever talk to a quarterback, when they talk about the game, bro, you just be like, oh my, like they like mad scientists. They could break down the game quick. Not saying that they could perform it, but their brain just operates on a different wavelength. So it's certain players with certain situations I defer to, just like offensive line. I defer to Ray Roberts quick. I ask big bro, like, hey man, with this scheme, what should have happened? If it come to DBs, I'll talk to Cove. I'll talk to other known defensive backs that played in the NFL to make sure I'm not tripping. I just don't rely on myself. So I guess I'm saying that to say, like, because I'm speaking more to Twitter right now and the fans on message boards and things like that. Like, salute to the Sabres, salute to 247, all the folks who provide their feedback. And again, as y'all can see, we 11 minutes in, and I'm not even getting to the X and O's of the game, because I think right now nobody want to talk about it. God dang on X and O's right now. I'm checking the pulse of the fan base, and y'all know up and down. Y'all saw what y'all saw yesterday. You saw what you saw. You saw what I tweeted. I feel like when we start the beginning of the games, I feel like when it's scripted and it's prepared, I think Dez does a very good job of scripting plays. And one thing I learned about this damn app is that you got to overstate what you're saying. Because when people saw me say that, they're like, oh, he's not great, he's terrible. Then, but what about the other, what follows? Grant, like, bro, I'm only talking about the 10. I'm basically saying I wish we can duplicate the script as the game go on, because when he's on script, he's very good. And nobody fights that. But some people just get so, they want to be just combative. They just want to, like, not rain on your parade, because that's kind of disrespectful to say they want to rain on my parade. But I just think, like, some folks just basically, I think they just want to serve me shut the hell up juice. Is that what it is? Do y'all just want to serve me shut the hell up juice when y'all fully understand where I'm coming from and you still just attack it? Because if that's what it is, that's what it is. Maybe I serve you shut the hell up juice and you've been waiting on the day to serve me shut the hell up juice, and that's fine. I'm immune to shut the hell up juice. I can't be served shut the hell up juice. I could be proven wrong. But the shut the hell up juice moniker does not work on the father of this juice. You can't serve me that something that pours in through my veins. You know what I'm saying? It's like trying to, like, nah, that's nasty. I can't say that. But yeah. So when it comes to, because somebody was, you know, in the space yesterday was just saying, you know, Tony just, I really just can't stand, like, his body language or how he talks at the end of the games. And I'm just like, I just think he wants to be respectful. Like, you can tell this dude frustrated, bro. Like, last year, people used to get upset with him on the sideline for yelling at players in the heat of the battle. On one hand, folks would say this new generation is soft. These players are soft. The game is soft. We need some toughness. I even saw yesterday certain decisions are soft. This is soft. That's soft. And this don't pertain to you if you don't feel like yelling at a player is wrong. But if you're a player, people that are saying that the generation is soft, and then on the other hand, you say, oh, you shouldn't be yelling at the player like that. What are we doing? Because, like, in a way, you got to be reprimanded in the heat of the battle. That comes with sports. It's no different than you saying fire him. That comes with the business, right? When you sign up to play a sport, you run the risk of being reprimanded by your coach while they're using an elevated voice. Now, I'm not saying they have to curse you out. Notice I'm saying they're holding you accountable while raising their voice. That's going to happen. But you have people who don't like it. You got people who don't like that Tony Bennett don't wear ties. It's just is what it is. People don't like certain things about somebody and they harp on that. Now, let's stick to this football and what took place. UVA came out, new quarterback, Tony Musket. That first series, efficient. Play calling was very good, was balanced. We tried to run like a quick speed option to start the game off, and I believe, let me go to the play chart. I want to make sure I'm accurate. Let's go. Start no huddle. Yep, we had the rush to the left, which was the quick option. Second and five, we ran shotgun. Short pass to Malachi Fields on a stop, on a hammer route versus press. Got a first down. On first down, Musket had a rush for 9 yards. I want to say it was a quarterback draw, but maybe he just got flushed out. I'm not looking at the film right now. I'm looking at the play sheet. Then second and one, we ran an inside zone, which we had like the end held Musket, so Musket gave it to Pace. And that end dropped down and clipped Kobe by the back of his foot. And that run play, we got really, like, this one I understand about you offensive linemen, man. Is the conditioning with y'all? Like, what's going on? Because you, the first series, y'all, like, the past couple games, y'all been getting a push. It's many games that I highlighted on my iPad that I saved, and I'm just like, that I probably share on Twitter just to show you, you fans and stuff, like, look, man, they get a push. Like, what the hell? Like, why you can't consistently do that? Like, what's going on? But anyway, let's stay with the drive. Next play was a pass incomplete. That's when we tried to throw behind the back shoulder throw that Malachi actually dropped, in my opinion. The next play, we ran Kobe on the inside zone for 4 yards. So we done ran the ball for 5 yards, ran the ball for 9 yards, ran the ball for 4 yards, ran the ball for 4 yards. On third and six, had a pass, short pass play on a dig route. Well, not a short pass play, but we had a pass play. That was to Malachi. That was a dig route, 18 yards. Very good throw. And the next one was a pass to Malik when he got flushed out the pocket on the run, 23-yard gain. And then we had an inside zone to Hollins on a 6-yard line that got blown up. So we ran an inside zone to Hollins, right? We used the same exact formation. If I'm not mistaken, I'm not looking at the film, but if I remember correctly, we ran the same exact formation, the same exact motion with Malik coming across the formation from the field to the boundary. We hiked the ball. We faked it to Mike, and then we threw it to Mike. So we set it up. So it was almost like we ran that run play to see what type of reaction we would get. We saw they were crashing. And in past games, we have shown that we'll run the same play back to back. But he set it up. He ran a play action. We got a touchdown off of it. That drive was a very good drive. Very good drive. But then we go to the second drive. Let's see. Our second drive, we had a rush to the right for 2 yards. Then a rush to the right again for 1 yard. And then we got sacked. I think I remember that sack. I want to say Tony could have threw it to the mesh route. So we had a mesh route for Malachi coming from the field to the boundary, I believe. Somebody was coming from the field to the boundary. Again, I don't have my iPad in front of me. But I felt like, so here's my issue with this drive. After we got this stop versus Boston College, they went for it. No, they didn't go for it. They punted the ball. So we got them on the six and out. Six plays and out. We get the ball back. I get it. We ran on first down the first series. But once we ran the ball and got 2 yards, I want to throw the ball again. That's my hiccup. I don't want to run back to back. I don't ever want to see us run back to back. Like that's I think that's my issue. Especially when we get stops. When we get stops, I want to see us continue to be aggressive. Now let's get to that. I just feel like we're not a very aggressive offense after we have some success. We're aggressive when we're looking for success. But once we achieve success, we are not aggressive anymore on offense, in my opinion. I feel like then we feel like, all right, let's take some clock away. No, keep being aggressive. I feel like you guys, when you're aggressive, Dez, I feel like the players become aggressive. I feel like the offensive line actually responds better. But when we try to run and we become complacent, I think it trickles down. I think it's a trickle-down effect. I really do. It's not me trying to take a personal shot, but I really do. I really feel like we are a reflection of our coaches. So that's just how I feel. I could be wrong. This is my personal opinion. I'm not saying you're not a good play caller. I'm saying you got to stay aggressive. If we want the players to stay locked in and stay focused, you can tell as a player if you feel like your coach is just settling. We was like, God rest his souls, with Coach Wells, we would laugh and joke, be like, come on, coach, let's go after him. And we're young, so we don't understand. And at the end of the day, you still got to execute. But it's times with George be like, all right, we got to open it back up. Y'all knew it was times where George would just start running. Where we, they say he started playing not to lose, and the defense is hitting on all cylinders, so it's like you want to make sure your defense is getting the rest, but that doesn't mean you can't still be aggressive. You can still create organized chaos. Hold on. But that's just what I saw, man. I really did. I think defensively, man, I like what I saw in the first half. I like that Dre Walker got the start. Cam got another start. Cam Robinson, then Ahern, came in and did some great things. Ahern, you played your high part. So I thought James Jackson did a good job flowing. I really thought, man, the first half, our D-line and our defense did a very good job. A very, very good job. Until that last drive before the half where the pass interference penalty definitely helped them out. And I feel like, yo, Cal, let me holler at you, man. I feel like if you outside leverage, bro, versus the slot and you got inside help because the free safety's there and you open up your hips with your butts to the sideline, a sail route should not beat you. You should not have to baseball turn. Like, understand leverage. That's all I ask corners. Like, I could speak emphatically at the receiver position, at the corner position, because I actually play those positions. So that's why I'll speak to those positions without hesitation. If you are executing a certain leverage, if you are outside leverage, you take those routes away. Like a baseball turn is showing me that you are out of position. Nobody baseball turns if they already got leverage that way. That's when you just open your hip 45 degree angle and come downhill. Like, you don't baseball turn when you already outside leverage and you run the outside route. Like, you just ran a circle for no reason. Because the quarterback identified that you're baseball turning. So he's going to dog him, meaning he's going to bring him back. He's going to throw it to his back shoulder. Because you understand you got outside leverage. When you baseball turn, you really went to the sideline fast. So that's why you had to slow down and grab his hip. And he threw it behind him, so it made you drift, which you wanted to make sure that, hey, I can't let him catch his book, because he catch that ball as him and Harrod one-on-one. But that should have been you coming downhill, picking that. Either you coming downhill, you picking that, or he don't even throw it. I don't think he throws it. If you don't baseball turn, he's not making that throw. And he's getting sacked by Famui. He's getting sacked. Famui got home. Matter of fact, you might have got a pick because he just threw it because he was about to get sacked. So I don't even think he dogged it on purpose. He just threw a duck. And I really feel like if you would have stayed butt to the sideline, basically like the corner did versus Malachi for Boston College. He showed press, he bailed, had his butt to the sideline. He looking at the quarterback and he was looking to undercut. That's all you had to do. You got your butt to the sideline, you drifting back. If you run dig, if you run post, you run right into Harrod. Harrod can come down here. Harrod, see him. That was my only hiccup on that. Oh, and then we got a pass interference. I just felt like Malcolm grabbed the receiver for nothing. But anyway, that to me, that was the only defensive series where we had a lapse. Other than that, you guys played your butts off. You played your butts off, bro. Y'all held them in check. I love that the defensive linemen were taking the proper angles to make sure Castellanos wasn't outflanking them. I saw many a times that Fumui, instead of coming flat, he would run to the intersection point. He would use his angle to make sure he would get upfield to get their quarterback. Chico going against two and three guys. Like, every time Chico been in rushing, he getting chipped by somebody. He just got a motor. He going. We ran some stunts. We ran some different games up front. So we was making him uncomfortable. And then at the end of the... So I do want to say, as you can see, the staff will listen to you guys because we ran the quarterback sneak. And then we got a penalty. Here's what I do want to say. We got to clean this up. We got to clean up the penalties. It's ridiculous. It's getting out of control now. It's really irritating me. It really is. Like, I don't know what's going on with you guys. You got to stay locked in. But it's just trash. It kills our drives. Like, we got stuff going on. And all of a sudden, y'all just be jumping the gun. And you're so nervous because everybody, you know, getting speed rush on you. So you're trying to get out of your stance fast. Or you're getting handsy. And you grabbing. You gotta work on your foundation, work on your technique. You gotta do something, man. Cause something gotta change. Either we gotta make a change up there or something gotta change. Something gotta change. Something gotta change. There's been times where I've seen y'all just get destroyed too. Off the, like, soon as the ball snap, boom. One of y'all just in the backfield on your hind parts. You gotta have some pride, bro. Like, If somebody is just toasting me, God dang it, I got to look at myself like, man, I got to fix this. I can't keep doing this to my team. 11 penalties for 90 yards is unacceptable. That's unacceptable. I hope y'all running in a lot. I hope that's a lot of conditioning going on for 11 penalties for 90 yards. Yeah. And it happened, like, they killers, bro. They killers. We had three straight plays that went for 10 yards or more, and we rolling, and we going no huddle. They can't substitute. We got them spread out. They can't bring pressure. And all of a sudden, we get a holding penalty. And then right after the holding penalty, we get a false start. Like, what the hell? Why are you false starting after we just got a penalty? Why? Why are you false starting that guard on a pass play? Why? I can see the tackle. I can see tackles false starting on a pass play. I can. Because they got to kick, get up out of there. They got to get out of dodge. But you at guard getting illegal procedures? Come on, son. Come on, man. So, yeah, it was this drive right here. We had a no huddle. We had a pass to Malik for 15 yards. Then we had a Mike Hollins rush for 13 yards. Then we had a Tony Musket rush for 11 yards. Then Musket got out the pocket, and there was a holding call on Nana. And then Furness had a 5-yard penalty. So it was first and 25. They get pressure. We had incomplete to P. Jones. Then we run P. Jones for 5 yards. And then on third and 20, we throw a pass to Mike Hollins. 8 yards, and then we got a punt. Can't say nothing bad about the defense the first half, really. Offensively, you got to stay aggressive, man. I do want to say this, man. For the love of, for this, this is like a side track because I just looked at some of the questions. Can we? Because I know y'all saw them play on TV last night. They lost to Notre Dame, but salute to Duke. For all the folks who are older, can we realize, like, as things evolve, sometimes the hard truth, you just ain't going to accept it. Like when people be like, oh, Duke's more accomplished than us as a football program. That's sad. We reached our, it's a low day. This, I didn't think this would never happen. You ain't been paying attention since 2013 then. If we go to last decade, let me share with y'all. Shout out to Danny Nickel, because I had this discussion with him. And he actually shared this screenshot. So let me share something with y'all that you probably ain't going to like, that you ain't going to want to listen to. But we're gonna talk about it, because this is what we're doing right now. Because everybody I keep bringing up Duke this, Duke that, Duke. Duke has won since 2013 69 football games. 69 to 61. Maybe that's just the ACC. I think that's just the ACC. Or it might be overall. No, anyway, 69 to 61. UVA is at the very bottom of the ACC. 50 wins and 75 losses. So can we stop acting like Duke just became a better football program? Like, I got both. Look. So I got our 120-year history of Virginia football. Because for some people think we were just a juggernaut. We were good. Were we ever really a great, like, I'm just being honest with y'all. Were we really ever a great, consistent winner? We were a good winner. But can you ever call this football program, like, during George's years, you could say, yeah, it's great. Because, from 89, they was ranked as high as 15, to 90, number one, 91, 19, 92, 10, 93, 15, 13. 95, 9, 96, 12, and 1998, number 7, 22. So 99 was the last year Coach Welch had a ranked team in the AP during the season. It was number 22. That was the highest. Coach Welch had 6 seasons in which his teams were ranked in the top 25 at the end of the season. The best being 1994, when they were ranked 15th at the end of the season, 16th the next season at the end of the season, 95 when they won the ACC, and that was the year they won back-to-back bowl games, the Independence Bowl and the Peach Bowl, 94 to 95. Then my second year here, we were ranked 18th at the end of the year after we lost to Georgia in the Peach Bowl. We were 9-3 on the season. Coming to that game, we were 9-2. The losses were to Florida State and Georgia Tech. We blew a second-half lead versus Georgia Tech and just lost to Florida State. But then you had Groh. He came in 2002. His high was 22, and he entered the season ranked 22. Then he was AP 18th. By the end of the year, he was not ranked at all. Then the following season, he was preseason ranked 16th, and he entered the season 23rd after being ranked as high as number 6. Then the following season, 25. And then by the end of the season, he wasn't ranked. The next year, wasn't ranked. 2007, got up to 16. They wasn't ranked, even though they won 9 games. 2008, no rank. 2009, no rank. 2010, no rank. Then Mike London got up to 24 in 2011. Ended up not being ranked. He was 8-5 that year. Then we had no ranked season until we finished. Until we got up to 25 in 2018. And then it was 23rd in 2019 and finished the college football playoffs number 24. But since 2013, Duke was ranked 23rd, 20, 19, 22, 22. This year, 17 is their highest. They won 10 games with Cutcliffe and 2013, then 9 games, then 8 games, then 4 games, then 7 games, then 8 games, then 5, 2, 3. He left. And granted, he even started off shaky. Cutcliffe was 4-8, then 5-7, then 3-9, and 3. You know good as well. Man, let me see. So people was asking Mike to be fired. after he went 2-10. And then he went 5-7. Then he went 4-8. Duke actually kept Cutcliffe after he went 3-9 back to back season, his third and fourth season. Then his fifth season, he went 6-7 and got to a bowl. Then he won 10 games. Then he won 9. Then he won 8. Then 4. Then he went to 2 straight bowl games again. Then his last 3 years where Bronco pretty much owned, like his last 4 years, Bronco owned him. And now you bring in Mike Elko. Like Mike Elko, everybody keeps saying, Mike Elko's like, bro, man, just respect. Like at the end of the day, man, I just respect Duke for where they are right now. I don't look at them like they were when they was essentially trash. And I can't say they trash can juice because they beat me head to head 1 year in 99. They was 3-8 that year. And they beat us. Like my years here, Duke won 2 games, 4 games, 3 games, and then were 0-11 in 2000. So if anybody that watched Duke like in the 90s, post, you know, like, yeah, in the 90s, if you started from the 90s, yeah, Duke, some trash can juice. Once they got to 13, they won't trash can juice no more. So I don't always get the correlation of comparing ourselves to them. I really don't. I really feel like you just got like, I guess, and this is just my personal stance. I don't like comparing myself to anybody. God got a plan just for me. Just like he got a plan just for this program alone. Like when you compare, you just make it worse, in my opinion. Like it drives you nuts even more. It really does, in my opinion. Oh, why they did it? Woo, they did it. Like, that's when you start telling kids, oh, so-and-so made it, so can you. No, that ain't true. You better tell them more. You better tell them how much work that individual put in, how he took advantage of an opportunity, how timing is everything, how a little bit of luck has to come into play. It's just like everybody makes it so cut and dry that I really feel like they aren't comfortable with having these real conversations because then they feel like, oh, maybe I was wrong. Like, you're not wrong. I just feel like we do ourselves a disservice by just throwing stuff out there versus saying, because I feel like you take away from Elko, no, I ain't going to say you don't take away from Elko. I don't. I really feel like he just did a phenomenal job. He was a hire that they didn't know what they had. It's almost like Tony Bennett here. It was a home run. Right now, you can say Tony's been a miss. He got 3 wins. We won an 8-game losing streak. We ain't won since last October. It's October now. So maybe we win our next game, our first game in October. And ironically, they wear a little bit of gold like Georgia Tech, but you know what I'm saying. But I don't know, like, because it's questions like, what can we do with the program going forward? I don't really have the answers. I really don't. I just continue to encourage folks to come out and support the players. They're really trying to win each and every game. Coaches don't spend all this time in the film room to be trash and to be abysmal and to be terrible. Like, nobody goes out on the field to be terrible. We have the luxury of seeing results, and then we can say, oh, you shouldn't have did that. We do. It's times that, like I've said in the past, that it's been a good play call, but somebody didn't execute it right. It's been times when we had adjustments and it wasn't executed correctly. I could see conceptually that, oh, that's a good idea, but it's like, damn. If these guys were pros, I'll say names and say who missing this tackle, who missing that block, who missing that, just to really drive home. Like, and I really don't have enough time to do NFL breakdowns, but I'm an Eagles fan. I watch a lot of like Eagle games. So when I be in spaces talking to other Eagles fans, I could say, oh, Jalen Hurts should have did X, Y, and Z. Oh, Devontae Smith right here should have ran his route like this. Or this lineman, he did this. Because they pros, they're getting paid. So, you know, people come at me and, you know, people at me yesterday. Shout out to Enoch that came in the spaces, but he had added me. That was the first time I have a conversation with him, but he added me. It was like, I know, unlike Ball Hawk, who doesn't call for coaches to be fired and they went on that rant, I'm always transparent why I don't say a coach should be fired. Like, here's the thing, bro. Sometimes I get kind of frustrated because I'm put in a difficult situation by, like, different fans. So I remember when Coach Elliott, the hiring process was taking place. And I had a couple spaces when we got word that Dex from Jerry Radcliffe that, you know, Dex was already all, you know, whatever he reported. I'll just leave that there. He was reporting things. And I was recapping what was being reported. I'm a recapper. That's what I do. I recap things that are already out. So I was recapping certain situations, people filing in, asking me, what's your thoughts? And me being Mr. Fair, I play devil's advocate. I give you one end of the spectrum, and I give you the other end of the spectrum. But I can't control when people come in spaces and when they leave spaces. So if somebody come in spaces and they see me playing one end of the spectrum, or they came in late, they don't understand that I'm giving you both sides of the coin. So you had some folks who swore up and down that I was against Tony Elliott being hired because I really wanted Dex to have the job. And then you have folks who was like, Ball Hawk don't want us to hire Dex because that's his friend and he don't want him to be susceptible to negativity again. And you could say all those people who report anything they heard, they were right. Because they heard me doing both ends of the spectrum. So if somebody said, well, I heard you in your space say this. Yes, you did hear me say that. But did you understand what I was doing in that segment? I was giving you, this is if I supported Dex, I would want. This is something that would give me cause of pause as far as Dex being the coach. This is something that would have me in support of Tony. This is why I probably wouldn't want Tony. So if somebody come in spaces, they just hear what they hear. They leave, they go, and they report on what they heard. And they not lying. They just don't understand that, yo, if you listen to the whole thing, you'll know he's not against either or. Because people always say, hey, Ball Hawk, would you want Dex to be the coach? I'd be like, man, I would love for Dex to be the coach, but then I would also be terrified because he's a very good friend of mine. Looked up to him. And I wouldn't want him to go through what he went through when he was a special team coach. I remember, and I'm so active on message boards, and I can't fault folks for feeling the way they do when they feel like a coach is failing at their position, at what they do. I can't. So as many times as a fan may feel a certain way for a former player, and again, I can't control how former players talk. I try to make sure I'm respectful to a fan if I'm talking on one of these apps. Only time I may get really disrespectful if I feel like I'm disrespected. And I have to continue to do a better job of communicating that, hey, I felt like you just disrespected me. Were you trying to disrespect me? Now, if somebody confirms that they're trying to disrespect me and they don't give two you-know-whats if my feelings are hurt, then I'm going to give the same energy without a shadow of a doubt, and I'm not going to feel bad. But a lot of times, in the past, I would just snap on folks, and then that person would be like, yo, I didn't know I disrespected you. And I'd be like, damn, I feel like a dumbass. My bad. So I've gotten better. But I've seen some of my brothers go at some of y'all. I have. But I can't be out here caping for everybody. Y'all kill me when I take up for coaches and stuff. I can't be out here caping. Maybe if I cape for you one time, then you'd be like, okay, Boho, he means well. Because y'all try to pack me up yesterday. And try to pack me up. You know what I'm saying? In a sense. Like, you could tell when somebody talking about you, but they don't really want to at you, because if they at you, then it's like they really throwing a shot at you. But they trying to be respectful, but they really got you in mind when they got the tweet. I get it. It's fine. And I own it. You know what I'm saying? Like when my man Brandon Lloyd, salute to Brandon. Me and Brandon played basketball, pick up basketball against each other for years. So anytime y'all see my exchanges with him, just know that's like locker room talk with me and him. Like, I ain't got no heart, no ill will versus him. But when he was like, how can anybody defend this coaching staff? And I retweeted it. I said, I'll defend him. I'll ride with him. I'm good. Like, I'll be on Front Street. I never got an issue. Like, me as a former player, I'm going to support the coaching staff here. That's just me. I'm around them. I'm talking to them. Like, I ain't two-faced, bro. I'm not a two-faced dude. I ain't no snake. I ain't no sucker. I ain't going to befriend you and then get on these apps and start bashing you. If anything, I'm going to have a conversation with you first as a man. But then as a man, some men just do man things when they know somebody personally. So that's why I don't personally go at Tony or go at Dez in the way that y'all want me to, because I personally talk to them. That ain't a man way to go about it, in my opinion. That's just my culture. That's just why, how I was raised, where I come from. That's just me. And I'm not saying you less of a person for doing it. We all know when you don't got a personal relationship with somebody, you're going to blast them. You don't know them. But when you know somebody, you build a relationship with somebody. Like you guys, if I ever talk to you, interact with you.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
On a message board, on these apps, courtesy of my podcast, or if you see me in person, I really feel like your respect for me won't allow you to just go out on Twitter and dog me. You probably hit me up personally behind the scenes. Or you may even first say, you know, I love you, but, and even how you deliver it, it's going to be more receptive to me, like by me, because how you communicated it. I shouted out Brandon yesterday. He communicated something about Tony, about, hey, man, you're a great human being. It just is like, you might not be the guy for the job. I was like, bro, that's actually, I commend you for that. That's big of you. Because I know he like to just throw pet. Like, that's me. He going to talk his talk. But for him to just be respectful in his manner, I was like, yo, that's dope. I ain't got no issue with that. I really don't. I ain't got no issue if you take petty shots. But if I know you personally, I'm going to have fun with you. My dog Darius Wynn always be going at coaches. Always. And I go, whether you see me on Twitter, behind closed, we play 2K together. I be like, dog, you tripping. But that's my guy. Like, I know him. So I'm going to talk to him. If I don't know y'all personally and y'all say something about a coach, you ain't, don't worry about me. I ain't going to say nothing to you. I'm really not. Unless you come on one of my tweets. If you come on one of my tweets and start talking bad about a coach, then I may respond. I might. It's not 100% sure. And even when I'm responding to you, I'm treading lightly because I don't know you. So who am I to just try to engage in this back and forth when you don't even follow me? I don't follow you. We ain't never really had interactions. Like, most of the time, I'm like, yo, how this person start talking to me? Like, who is this person? Have I talked to this person before? That's most of the time, that's what I'm doing. And then I'm not above reproach. Like, I'm not no big millionaire out here making seven figures, you know, owning a bunch of stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll talk to somebody. I'm not above constructive criticism. I had somebody tell me the other day, like, hey, man, I feel like you'll never let nobody just share their side. And I was like, you know what? Let me really see what I'm doing to this person currently for them to feel that way. And I'd be like, yo, bro, that wasn't my intent. Like, you can share your thoughts. I'm not shooting your thoughts down. I'm not even debating with you. I'm just having a discussion. Because in a debate, it's like you're trying to prove who's right and wrong. I try to stay out of debates. I can't tell somebody how to feel after a game, bro. I can't tell nobody how to feel about Tony Elliott. I just said, me personally, to answer some people's question, I still support him. Would I remove him as head coach? I wouldn't. Not right now. Because for me to follow through with something, I already got to have a solution. And I don't even got the solution. So just say if I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to fire Tony. I don't even know who would sign up for this brand called University of Virginia Football. Who would want to be a part of this brand right now? And the turmoil has been through the past couple of years. We had a guy that was a great man that helped turn the program around after 3 years, then got us to win a bowl game, then got us to the Coastal Championship, then got us to the Orange Bowl. COVID hit, went 500 back-to-back years, felt like he was tired and left, went, you know, without anybody knowing, created uproar. And then you had a guy come in that everybody was calling like this offensive guru and one of the best assistant coaches in America, even got the award for it. He takes a job not understanding that the old guy that was here was frustrated because he felt like it was no follow through. But as soon as that old coach left and a new coach begins, we get groundbreaking news. We get big wads of donations to help build, follow through with the master plan. And then the foundation crumbles, which was the guys up front. The guys up front left. We haven't recovered from that, bro. Like, think about every game as a fan, what you say. And this is not a knock on those guys up front. It's not. I'm just being real. I told you it's going to be a real episode. And it's like it's a broken record because everybody just forget that you can't win without a foundation unless you are super creative. And it has to be a headache to be a play caller when you just don't know if you can consistently protect that guy that's throwing the football. And you know you really can't consistently run the football. Like, when Brendan Armstrong put up those video game numbers, bro, one thing for sure was that we could protect Olu, Bobby Haskins, Glazer, Swoboda. All those dudes can protect. They could protect. And we just didn't want to run the football because it was so fun. We got all these weapons on the outside. We got an avatar as a Jelani Woods at tight end, Wicks, Keaton, Billy Kemp. The list goes on and on, the weapons we got. But through all that glitz and glamour, the foundation was there and it was up front. The reason why we were so successful in 2019, because of the foundation up front. We saw what happened in 2019 when we couldn't protect the Notre Dame game, when they were trying to rip Bryce Perkins' fingers off. And then we saw what happened, what we had to do. So, because sometimes complimentary football is just an answer for an answer. Because when we lost Bryce Hall to the Miami game, and it took us a couple of weeks to go through that hangover, and then the Duke game, we get opportunistic as a defense and cause a lot of turnovers, and we win. Then we go to that North Carolina game. Y'all remember that? Nobody thought we had a chance to really beat that North Carolina game because we were struggling defensively, and Sam Howell and it was hitting on all cylinders. And guess what we did? Went blow for blow. Because at the end of the day, they could not get close to Bryce Perkins. And we realized complimentary football is, we're going to pick up the slack for you, defense. And that's why I feel like this year, as an offense, I want us to stay aggressive because we got to pick up the slack for the defense. Not saying the defense is bad, but the defense has been riddled with injuries now. Dre Walker played the first quarter, got an interception. I didn't care about the 14-yard discrepancy. They were at the 34-yard line. He got the interception at the 20-yard line. Young man, get your first career interception. Don't let nobody be super coach on these apps talking about, we needed a them 14 yards ain't make a difference. Get your interception, man. We want turnovers. Thank you. Get the interception. But then Dre got banged up, and he didn't play the second half. And I just felt like even back there, we couldn't really do what we want because Dre is a really good man-to-man corner, in my opinion. I just felt like he was the perfect yin to Cohen King's yang. I think they play well off each other as bookends. I really do. Because I really feel like he can do things that Cohen can't do. And Cohen on the close side, if Cohen is in the boundary, and a lot of times you get a close side, meaning that's a tight end side, Cohen is the perfect corner you want on a close side. Now you putting a natural box safety who's playing corner back in the box. Now we could do some things. And we started doing some things. But then BC came out in the third quarter and saw what we were trying to do, and they adjusted. I just want to talk about that third quarter for them offensively. What they did offensively to our defense, they realized that they was going to continue to wear us out. I really felt like that. They just kept running downhill, 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 pull. They kept running belly, belly, just pulling the guard and center, pulling the guard and center, going to the boundary, motioning away, orbit away to the field. Got to close inside. Then we taking the safety, putting them to the field too. Then they outnumbering us and they pulling and going back to the boundary. And they were just working us and working us and working us and working us. Getting the third and six, running quarterback power. Getting the third, fourth and two, running inside quarterback zone. Like, I want, you know, that's why y'all don't really see me really get in the, if it's third and short, fourth and short, we got to get in the center. Because at the end of the day, man, again, a lot of these teams just execute. Now, if it's 4 inches with our offensive line, yeah, I admit, you might as well just go quarterback sneak. You need to. Even if it's third and two, just go quarterback sneak back to back time. You can just fall for it. Get the touch push. Hell, do what the Eagles do. See if it worked for you. But I did like that we went under center and we snuck it, even though we got a penalty. I give you a round of applause, but I ain't gonna hit the round of applause. But let me tell you guys, let me give you a quarter by quarter breakdown. The first, let me give you the tale of two quarters. I'm gonna go second quarter and third quarter. Look at these two tale of two quarters. Check this out. So the second quarter, UVA gained 171 yards of offense on 20 plays, 10-13, 146 yards passing. And then 7 rushes for 25 yards. Mike Hollins had 1 rush for 13 yards. Paris Jones had 1 carry for 5 yards. And then Musket had 4 carries for 20, but lost 14 due to sacks. So he averaged, one yard after that. And then we held Boston College to 87 yards on 17 plays. We won that quarter 14-7. This is going into halftime. Now, granted, the touchdown before the half was a Hail Mary, in which worked in our favor with the hands to the face, with the helmet coming off. Oh, just the helmet coming off. But then look at this third quarter. So we gained 171 going into halftime. We rolling, right? So we went from 96 in the first quarter to 171 in the second quarter. To 12 damn yards in the third quarter. 12. 8 plays, 12 yards. Musket went 4 of 5. 4 of 5 for 12 yards. You complete 4 passes for 12 yards. That was almost like Shador started out like 4 for 4 for like 12 yards or something like that when he was playing USC yesterday. So you come out of the break and you gain 12 yards as an offense, and then our defense give up 176 just because you three in and out real quick. That ain't complimenting football. As much as I want to be like, damn, defense, what we doing? Defense did make them settle for a field goal. Let me see. They came out of half. They ran 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, that's the fourth quarter, my bad. Let me look at the third quarter play chart. So their first drive, they had the ball. How many plays? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 plays. Was that the field goal? Yeah. So that was 12 plays. That was the field goal drive. Then we get the ball, 3 and out. They get the ball back. 1, 2, I remember we got the pass interference. I remember that. Castellanos incomplete, pass interference on Corn. Yeah, that one on Corn was pretty iffy. That was iffy right there. And then Corn got beat on a fade route. So that took them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 plays to score. Then the offense get the ball back. 1st and 10, 2 and 8. We get a pass interference. Then we throw a short pass to Kobe Pace for 4 yards. And the next time we throw an interception, then they get the ball right back and they score in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. After they got a 4th and 3 for a quarterback run up the middle. And do you know that touchdown pass was terrible? They got twins with the outside receiver on the line of scrimmage. Our outside corner is playing press. Slot, the safety is on the slot, like 8 yards off. And for some reason, we head up versus outside leverage. I would think in that situation, you'll be more outside shade just because it's a lot of field. Like, you don't want them just to run a go route with all that field to the outside. Snap of the ball, the receiver comes off lollygagging. Most of the time, when I lined up on somebody in press, I'm kind of peeking to the end. Like, I'm peeking. I'm kind of looking at the quarterback, looking at the four, like, by formation with that twins like that, I'm kind of giving some space and looking like, yo, it could be a natural run route. But they run just a bubble screen and they score because we run into each other. We don't even realize that the number one receiver just walking off. Like, his whole body language lets you know he not getting the ball. You stop being like, you can't have tunnel vision right there. And I don't know if Harrod was screaming like, bump, 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 or screen, screen, screen. If he won't say in screen, something wrong. Like, they came right out and threw that bubble screen. That right there, that was disgusting to watch. That hurt my heart to see that. You know what I'm saying? So, let's go to Twitter. Let me see who had questions. We just went aggressive in the second half. And look, it won't because they was bringing heat. Because they were bringing heat in the first quarter. They brung six on the second touchdown pass we had. They brung six. We picked it up. I do want Dez to incorporate more mesh routes and understand that when he went those wide twins, we ran that quick screen to the boundary to Malik one time. Anytime we went wide twins, the defense really has to declare what they're in because the twins are so far removed from the box that those inside defenders really got to get out there to play in between. Because we had a big rush from Mike Hollins when we went to that wide twin set because they couldn't get lined. Both times, it was like all three times we ran that formation, they couldn't get lined up, and we hiked the ball. I really like that formation because I really feel like you could do a lot. If they're not pressing the point, you can run quick screen. If they are pressing the point, you could act like you running screen to the outside guy and fake it and run a rub up the sideline. Like, it's so many things you could do out of that, in my opinion. It helps the offense, understand what the defense is trying to do. So, let me see some questions here. What's behind the inability to run the ball against a team like BC? Just an inexperienced O-line or bad scheme? I thought run blocking was supposed to be easier for offensive line than pass blocking. Am I correct? Shout out to Mark. So, I don't know if pass blocking is easier than run blocking. I've asked various linemen and it's mixed. It depends on the individual. Some individuals feel like pass pro is easier versus run blocking. I really feel like just talking to, various former linemen about our offensive line, like this technique. We just got to improve on our technique. Like, sometimes we're just too high. They get up under our pad. They just push us back. It's almost like we Velcro. We just absorb everybody versus really firing off. Even when we pass pro, it seems like we don't shoot our hands out. Like, they're kick slide. And they're being positioned to strike, and it's almost like they hug and they get pushed back. And a lot of times, teams now, I saw BC late in the game, was really trying to just bull rush. They were just bull rushing. Also, while I'm thinking about it, this is why I think Coach Elliott really pissed off the fan base this game when we punted on their 37. And if I'm not mistaken, it seemed like Tony Musket really wanted to go for it, and the players really wanted to go for it. And coach was like telling them to get off the field. And it was kind of looking like, yo, we really punting right now? Like, I'm with them. You going against the coach in Boston. Like, here's the one thing I can say about Boston College. And you know what, fans? Y'all might be right in the way y'all be telling me we got this record. We might as well. But the Boston College coach, now granted, they ain't had the best success over since he been a head coach, I don't think. But they say he's one of the most aggressive coaches, meaning he's going to go for it on fourth down. His players know they're going to be aggressive. They always feel like they got a fighting chance. If you watch them play this year, they got down early and came back on everybody to at least make it a game. But when we went for it, we did not go for it on fourth down, and we happened to get, and we, you know, good thing we got the ball back, right, coach? We got the ball back. But when we punted the ball on a 37-yard line, bro, ain't no way, boy. Ain't no way. Ain't no way, boy. That's what I thought. Ain't no way. We really punting the ball. Like, ain't you? I can't defend. It's fourth and four. Fourth and four. We was on the 37. The 37-yard line. 37. And we punted the ball with Will. Not Will. I'm sorry. That ain't Will. With Daniel. You know Daniel ain't coughing, kicking nothing. Man, Daniel ain't coughing, kicked the kick yet. He going yard with it. He ain't slap button. He ain't sacrifice flying. He going yard. That's when people got pissed off at you, coach. I'm just being honest. I'm being real because you my guy. That's when people got pissed off at you. That's when I was like, oh, my God, come on. Because I understood not going for the 4th-and-1 versus NC State and trying to punt. But then after seeing that situation and how, because did you end up punting in the end zone anyway? Anyway, if it comes to trying to play short field, nah. So. But what's the other questions? We've been an hour. Here we go. Other questions. My bad. I got sidetracked. Something just popped in my head. Richard said, what's the one thing you think that would have flipped the last two games from losses to wins? Great question. NC State game. If we really execute red zone offense, when Malik took that short screen play, 60 yards, and got to like the 7, if we really dial something up and score 7 right there, that changes the dynamic of the game, in my opinion. When we get within the 10 and we can't score 7, I always feel like we're going to lose this game. That's been our MO since Coach Elliott took over. Inability to score touchdowns in the red zone. You remember the Miami game last year? That came to bite us in the high parts. Like, we get long runs, pushed out of the one long run. Somebody, like, we trip and fall. God bless the dead. But it's just unfortunate situations, and we just can't finish. So I felt like that play at NC State. This game... What's the one play? I feel like if Tony Musket could get that throwback for the interception and lead Malachi Fields up the field, once he saw the corner was playing trail technique outside in, if he would have just threw him up the field, you get that throwback and we complete that pass, I think we win that game. I really do. I think we win that game. So I think if I could flip those two plays, I just go on one play, those two plays, period. But next question. Let's see. Reasons to be hopeful about the future of Virginia football. I can't speak for other folks, man, but, you know, I love the program. I love the young talent that we have. You know, whether, you know, like you see Calandra, you see Dre Walker, you see Cam Robinson, you got Twitty, you got Harrison, you got Gibson, you got some young talent just getting burned on the defensive line, just want to continue developing the offense. Like, I see some promise. Like, I see that we can, like, here's the thing. For folks who saying we wouldn't win a game or we win one or two, nobody expected us to jump out and compete with Maryland as long as we did. So that's what pisses people off, because they like, oh, they better than what I thought they were. That's what irritates everybody. Like, for us to jump out and dominate Boston College, that show, like, yo, we actually better than what we perceive, but we just can't finish. So that's showing that we losers because we just can't finish. You got to learn how to finish. To be a true winner, you know how to finish. To be a true winner, you know how to come out of halftime with self-motivation. Not no cooked up coach got to give me one for the Gipper type of speeches. Because with any speech, it still takes the player to take it amongst themselves to light a fire up out of their own hind parts and to go out there and play for each other. Like, sooner or later, you got to realize, like, bro, you on film. And the scout ain't going to say, oh, well, his coach was bad. No, you still not performing. Period. That's accountability. That's the mindset of a champion. Now, as coaches, they know they got to get better. But here's my thing with the coaches. It got to be some follow through. It's like Mike Singletary said, your backup may be two levels below you, but if you keep messing up, I'm setting the precedent. I give you a prime example, man. And we've been over an hour. My bad if this has been a long episode. When I played in my first year in the Arena Football League for the Colorado Crush in 2003, our coach was a guy that was a scout for the Broncos and did things with the Broncos. And the arena game was a different game. And, you know, he had some good coaches, but the coaches couldn't control the personalities that were on the team. And I'm not saying that's happening here. I'm just using my own personal experience to kind of take you behind the curtain. And I was a young rookie as well. I had a strong personality. Didn't have the best discipline. Would talk hella trash, get in the other coach's face. Coach never sat me down, never did nothing. I was like super disrespectful, very unprofessional. Nothing happened all year. Led all rookies in interceptions, but you couldn't tell me nothing. We won two games. We beat the Indiana Firebirds and the Tampa Bay Storm. Now, the Indiana Firebirds had Eddie Brown. That's Antonio Brown's father. He's one of the best receivers in Arena Football history. His name is Touchdown Eddie Brown. The head coach for the Indiana Firebirds was Mike Daly. We beat Indiana for our first win. Then we beat Tampa a couple weeks later. We had two wins on the season, 2-14. Super undisciplined, didn't care, had a lot of talent. Felt like our coaches were good in their own right, but they didn't police us the way we need to be policed, in my opinion. So end of the year, They fired our current coach, bring in a new coach, which was Mike Daly, the guy in Indiana that we beat. He brought in some of his staff, and then he kept a couple of the coaches that was on the current staff. And I remember the first day he took the job, he remembered when I played them and just talked to other coaches about me. I remember he contacted me while I was back in Virginia. And he goes, you know, hey, partner. He's like, hey, partner, this is Mike Daly, new head coach of the Colorado Crush. And I'm going to tell you something, partner. I think you're a very good football player. Heck of an athlete. But there's one thing I don't tolerate, partner. Your attitude. So if you want a job here, partner, you better fix it. Or you're going to be out of here. Zero tolerance. So I hang up the phone and my ego starts to say, well, shoot, we beat y'all last year. Like, how he going to tell me what to do? But granted, he had been a champion at Indiana, a championship coach. Get to camp, playing, going through camp, having a good camp. And I remember what he said, so I'm on my best behavior, right? On my best behavior. Like, because I don't want to get cut. It's like my second year, you know? So I'm having a good camp, playing. And then one day I had a bad day. I remember I had a bad day. And then I had another bad day. And something happened in practice. Like I got in a scrum, like it was all like an almost fight with a teammate, but I kind of like remember what he told me and I ain't say nothing. And he blew the whistle. He was like, God, D word, you better fight for every inch. You don't let nobody get in your face. You don't do that. Blah, blah. Like he let me have it. And I'm looking at him like, but fool, you told me I couldn't do what I usually do. You know what I'm saying? In my head. So I remember going into practice. Go at the end of practice in his office, and I said, can I talk to you, coach? He was like, I was expecting you. So I'm like, what? He go, do you think I'm fair? Like, what you mean? He's like, do you think I treat you fair? And I go, you know, can I be fully transparent? He was like, yeah. I was like, nah, man, I feel like you baby, you know, one of my other teammates, you coddle him, but you be riding my ass and then I can't say nothing. He goes, partner, you misunderstood or misinterpreted what I told you when I called you. I said I won't tolerate your unprofessionalism and your immatureness when it comes to like talking shit to, I mean, not shit. I'm sorry. Sorry, kids for cussing. Talking trash to other coaches. He said, but never lose your edge. Your edge would make you a better ball player. And I ride you because I know it pisses you off. And when you pissed off, you play better. So I can't treat everybody the same. But I've learned how to push buttons with different players. And once that player understands what I want from them, they got a choice to make. Either they follow through or they getting up out of here. And I lie to you not, bro. We were 2-14 the year before. We started the first game. We won the first game. We came back. Was down by, was down by 11 points with 20 seconds left. We scored and then kicked the onside and scored again. So we won the first game of the year. I think we started off 2-0. Then we lost to Chicago. And after we lost to Chicago, one of my DB partners got cut. We won a couple more games. We lost again. Long story short, every time we lost, somebody lost their job. Like somebody was getting fired. And we was like, whoa, what's going on? I was like, yo, coach, are you cutting people just because we getting fired? He was like, nah. He said, but that'll probably wake you up. In other words, he was doing things to shift the culture. And it was usually like a bubble guy he was firing, like somebody that he felt like he could replace anyway. But then he would take starters and just bench them too, like if you lost. I guess what I'm trying to say is now it might be time for like Tony to shift the culture in a sense. There's guys that's been struggling that you might need to sit. And it might be a step back. But you got to like open up the eyes and let people know like you're not safe. We know guys have made, you know, like I know you made changes at corner. Like you made changes at corner. And you could have made changes at offensive line too. Again, you could have took a step back offensive line, but they know they've been struggling. They need to recalibrate. And sometimes that can be cancerous within your program if somebody is struggling and you're really like you can bench somebody and still believe in them. You could pull them, teach them how to see the game from the outside in, get in the film room. Understand what they were doing wrong. Help their brother who just took their position do well. Show that leadership. And that can overall make you better. And also help the morale of the team. Because it's like, yo, you see they struggling and you still playing them. And then the backup is like, damn, I can't get no burn. So you might lose them too. And it might be a trickle down effect. It really could be that way. Because we see so many other positions, they get rotated. They do. We see one guy was a starter here. Now he ain't a starter no more. We see one guy used to get burned here a lot. They don't get burned a lot no more. And they healthy. So I'm just saying for me personally, you have to make some changes up front. It's going to have to be some, like you made one shuffle, it worked. But if a certain individual or individuals are struggling, you're going to need to make the change. And you may take a step back. But they may wake them up. I don't know if it's going to wake them up until you do something to wake them up. If somebody get pulled and they quit on themselves, then they just quit. You did your job as a, like, here's the thing. As a coach, and I'm going to get on my soapbox because I'm not a coach. But I feel like if I'm a coach, I'm going to exhaust every option versus continue to do the same thing. Because, yeah, you got faith in folks. But even with faith in somebody, you still could say it's about that time. Ain't nothing wrong with still saying, yeah, it's about that time. Like Nick Howell's my guy. Our daughters played soccer together. When people's coming at Nick, I'm trying to protect Nick. And I knew the personnel we had, you know, and what we were trying to do. But then when schematically things just won't happen, I just understood like, yo, they just tired of him, bro. I can't, I can't fault it, bro. They tired of him. Now he got a job at Vanderbilt, but it's like, you just got to be like, yo, man, they ain't tripping. Like, ah, the data ain't helping, bro. Like, ah, it ain't helping. Because the reason why it's not, it really kind of confirmed it, because the very next year, it was a kid that was playing corner here that looked a whole lot better with another guy teaching them and got a whole lot more confidence. So it was like, ah, it was some truth there. Same kid became all ACC. That, y'all remember people used to talk bad about Cypress. Used to talk bad about him. And he struggled. And his confidence was shot. And don't get me wrong, man. The added pass rush definitely helps. The scheme definitely helped. But he performed. So, as a coach, you gotta go to your guys up front. Like, bro, are y'all confident? Because we just doubled Boston College's sack total. If you're not confident, I'm going to get you up out of there. You got to have them come to the gods type of conversations, man. That's just me outside looking in. Of what I, like, people always say, what would you do, Ball Hawk, if you was the head coach? If I was the head coach, I told y'all what I would have did leading up to this game. Like, as far as, like, sitting guys that had some personal fouls and things, like, I told you. Like, that's just because that's just where I'm from. Like, that's why I told you the Mike Daly story. Like, Coach Daly was cutting dudes when we would lose. That year we went 11-5. So we went from 2-14 to 11-5. That was 2004. Then do you know we won the whole Arena Bowl the very next season? Was the number one seed in our conference? Because it was drilled in us on what and what not to. Like, Coach Daly helped us understand the importance of flags and being disciplined and doing the little things. And he drilled it home and he sat people and he ran the hell out of you and he scolded you and he fined you. Like, you knew if you made a dumb mental error, he was putting your hind pots on Front Street. Your wallet was going to be a little lighter and you was on something physically at practice. Well, it was a hold, missed tackle, drop ball. You knew. And they followed through. And he'll say, hey, partner, you might be one of our best players. It don't matter. Got too many M.E.s, mental errors. You can't have these me's out here. Don't be out here having a lot of me's. And right now, we got a lot of me's, mental errors. And a mental error usually says, look at me. I'm effing up. Hey, coach, I'm effing up. Get me out of here. That's what it's telling the coach. If you having me's every game, how many holding penalties you got? How many offsides or illegal procedure penalties you got? Like, we went and documented guys each and every game. How many MEs they got? How many coverages you blown? How many tackles you missed? How many times you not lined up right? What's your grade after each game? How are you grading out? You might be grading yourself out of a position. But that's what I got, man. It's disappointing to see the potential and the fight, and then how we don't know how to finish yet. And again, no, you don't, like, nobody can give you, I can't just touch a player and be like, you're going to finish today. No. First of all, you got to be physically ready. Because I think with the injuries and being depleted up front now on the defensive side of the ball is taking a toll on us, and the young guys are doing a good job of filling in, and Rudd is doing a good job of schematically trying to change things up. So here's the thing. The defense wasn't what it was last year. We gave up over 200 yards rushing. They still got us the ball 4 extra possessions. They caused 4 turnovers. That's 4 extra possessions for the offense. When I think of complimentary football, I think of if I get an extra possession, I got to score points. It's not just about helping them get breaks. No, I'm going to score. I'm going to help a brother out. If I throw an interception, the defense is like, I'm going to get the ball back for you. That's complimentary football to me. I did not think our defense would be as strong because of I knew what we lost. But I didn't see teams really running on us like this because of the guys we had up front. You know what I'm saying? Like, teams are really investing running at us. Like, when we came out that break versus JMU, they said, bump it, we running at you. Even Maryland was like, bump it, we going to run at you with our third back, the back that y'all don't know about. And then Boston College said, bump it, we going to run right in. Because the running game sets up the passing game. Because I'll give you everybody loves stats, right? I mean, overall, because we always look at yards per carry a lot for running backs. If you look at their running back yards per carry, it wasn't that impressive. He had one big quarter that was impressive. Overall, he had 87 yards on 23 carries, but he averaged less than 4 yards a carry. Mike Hollins averaged actually 4.3, but he only ran the ball 3 times. Kobe Pace averaged 2.8 on 10 carries. And P. Jones averaged 4.5 on 9 carries. And then Musket averaged 0.6 because he lost 35 yards on being sacked 5 times. Musket had, really, he had 9 carries for 44 yards before you factor in the 5 sacks, because the 5 sacks count as carries. Malik Washington could have been the first receiver to have 100 yards in 4 straight games at this university. He had 97 yards on 9 catches. I think he had like 80-something. Malachi and Malik had 80-plus yards at halftime. That's crazy. I mean, we found ways to get. So Malik basically receiving yards came from the 2 flip passes we gave him. The one that was on 3rd and 2 that we ran that, yeah, we got to X that too. I get it. We did it on 1st down. You got good yards. But 3rd and short, they creeping up at the box. That angle. And I know you better all just throwing the ball, spreading people out throwing the ball. Like, Malik didn't have a single catch in the 4th quarter. Malachi didn't have a single catch in the 4th quarter. Jaden had 1 catch for 7 yards. Sackett Wood had 1 catch for 10 yards. And Sackett was actually getting open in the middle of the field. I mean, it was the pressure, but our tight ends were getting open. Man, we had 27 yards in the 27 yards in the 4th quarter. 12 yards. Oh, my God. This stinks. I'm done. I ain't talking no more, man. Hey, man, that's the pocket. That's oh, my God. You talking about not showing up at all. 12 yards in the 4th quarter. No, that's my bad. That's the 3rd. That's the 3rd. 27 yards on 16 plays. Bro, that's less than 2 yards a play. 16 times 2 is 32. We had 27. That's. One of 5 on 3rd down. They was actually 0-4 on 3rd downs in the 4th quarter. Good is the enemy of great. Be great in everything that you do. Never let nobody tell you you can't do what you set your mind out to do, man. We got to get better. Any more questions I forget? Let me see. Ain't no way, boy. Ain't no way. Less than 50 yards. Do you think Coach Elliott would look at the second half of the game and think, let's go win this thing versus let's just stay in the game? Seems very playing not to lose rather than playing to win. As an underdog, I feel like chances is more needed to win. He going to have to, man. You 0-5. I tell you what, though, if Coach be out here straight hucking and chucking and being aggressive, let's just, you know, let's keep the same energy. That's all I say. Because sometimes I feel like you're going to lose as a coach. You know, you aggressive. You want to go for things. Nah. I'm with you, dog. I'm with you, Ricky. Yeah, he got to go for all the coaches not making the right adjustments. Are the players just not executing? It's a little bit of both. A little bit of both. Because I'm not in the locker room, so I could just say it's probably both. They may not be making adjustments, or they try to make an adjustment and it's not executed. Execution not so good due to injuries, new guys being thrown in, and opinion on overall state of the program. And how do you fix the O-line problem? You got to shuffle some guys around, put some new guys in there. But that's it, man. It's 90 minutes. I appreciate y'all for tuning in. It's still Wahoo Wah. Got to get through the storm. Got to be patient. No, I don't want to say got to be patient. We gotta want, you continue to want more, but you be honest with your assessments and understand what you got. You assess what you have, assess what the solutions can be. And that's how we move forward. I don't want to compare ourselves to anybody else. Our path is our path. It just is what it is. Like in your life, you can't just look at somebody, oh, they did it, I could do it. No, that don't mean you could do it. You got to make the decision to do it and follow through and understand the game plan you set forth on yourself. And when it gets tough, how to mental fortitude to fight through and keep doing it. That's why I really don't like comparisons. I like comparisons to give you an idea of like a player's skill set. But as far as like program trajectory and this person turning the program around, that person turning the program around, that's a lot of things. And when people share the difference, we got to stop saying, oh, y'all just making excuses. Like, no, they give you the lay of the land. And at the end of the day, one person might just be better than the next, right? Because that's what it boils down to. He might just be better at his job at that institution than this person is at his job at this institution. Steve Kerr once said, if you would have put him on what, the New York Knicks, he probably wouldn't be the coach he is now, but he was blessed enough that he got with Golden State and he had those snipers waiting for him and Clay and Steph. Then boom, Phil Jackson, same way. I mean, because people always say, what would Phil Jackson be without an all-time great shooting guard and then also an all-time great big man in Shaq? People always say, you know, Popovich did more with less, but Popovich had Hall of Famers as well. Like, everybody need, like, you got coaches who did more with less. What's the coach that, Larry Brown? He was a coach that known to do more with less, but then, you know. Anyway, let me get off the soapbox. Appreciate y'all. Subscribe. If you have any thoughts, when I share this on the Saber, put it underneath in the box, man. I appreciate you. Salute to my man Chris Wright for always allowing me to share my content on the Saber. And if you ever want to reach me, you can just DM me on Twitter at IamBallHawk. Email me, TheBallHawkShow. No, it's TheBallHawk9. TheBallHawk9@gmail.com. I'm about to give y'all the wrong daggone email. But I know if you go to my website, AmarHawkins.com, you can go to the suggestion, the box at the bottom, and directly email your thoughts to me. I'm rambling. All right, man. Y'all be blessed. Have a great day. Appreciate y'all. Appreciate the support of the program. I know it's tough. I don't got all the answers, Sway. I never said I had all the answers, but I'm definitely going to support who's ever coaching our young ones, whether it's man, female, don't matter which sport, I'm going to support a Virginia coach until it's time for them to ride off into the sunset. Then when the next one come in, I'm going to fully support them. I ain't saying I'm caping for him, but that's just me. I'm going to support somebody. I'm going to support you. If I'm your homie and I know you, I'm going to support you. And you're going to want me to be right there having your back. All right, man. Peace.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.